You're listening to the Driving Confidence Podcast for drivers who want to be calm and confident on the road. We will be sharing tips, stories, and advice to beat driving nerves and anxiety and build your driving confidence. Whether you are just starting out as a learner or have had your driving license for years, if you want to transform how you feel about driving, this podcast is for you. So in this episode, we're welcoming on Dr. Lisa Dawn, who is an Associate Professor of Driver Behaviour at Cranfield University and the founder of SciDrive, providing specialist training for road safety professionals. And Lisa is also the author of the official DVSA Guide to Better Driving. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you. It's good to see you again.
And thank you for your time for doing this.
Lisa, when we invited you onto the podcast and we were talking about different topics, what could we talk about? And you said, why don't we base it around the book, around the Better Guide to Driving? So would you like to introduce the book to say what it's about? Who is it for?
Sure. Well, the book is really for anyone who is struggling with driving and finds that they're perhaps needing to upskill their knowledge and understanding about the road rules and how to deal with certain situations. So it's a range of people, really, not just learners, but, you know, people that maybe haven't been driving for a while and want to go back to driving, or people who struggle in certain situations, perhaps with certain manoeuvres. And of course, the book is also focusing on some of the human factors that, you know, are particularly relevant for the topic that we're going to be talking about, which is anxiety.
I think that's the bit that I liked about the book. Very often when people talk about driving and fear of driving, anxiety around driving, they talk about the driving, the nuts and bolts of the driving. But actually, in our experience, it's very rarely about the actual driving, the how to make a car move. Mm. It's nearly always that human element, isn't it? And that's what I liked.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, you can be highly practiced at certain manoeuvres, you can be a very experienced driver, but anxiety can really interfere with your ability to make decisions because you're processing those emotions and it interferes with the capacity that you have to be able to detect hazards, to be able to know what to do next. And then people can feel quite overwhelmed and not feel able to be safe on the roads. And so anxiety is very separate to the skill of driving. And I think what's key here is how many people actually fail the driving test because of anxiety, because they know that they can drive and the driving instructor knows that they can drive. But on the day, they just become so anxious and nervous that they make all sorts of mistakes. And that's simply because the brain has a very limited capacity for processing information. And when you're processing information, your attention is being diverted away from the kind of clever part of the brain where the decisions get made towards the kind of emotional part of the brain. And that diversion of attention is why people make mistakes when they're anxious.
I love that. It seems very simplistic in the way you explained it. So what happens? What is the reason the brain can't process that information that they know they've done before?
Okay. So the reptilian brain, you know, the early brain, where emotions are really critical for survival. If you imagine back in the day when we were, you know, running away from saber-toothed tigers and that kind of thing, survival was critical, and fear and anxiety was a major signal for surviving. And so it's our kind of go-to strategy for managing risk when we think about emotions and all those attentional factors that we need for driving, like attending to hazards and so on. All of the kind of capacity that we have to process information gets diverted to the early part of the brain, the reptilian brain. It's actually called the amygdala. It's in the temporal lobe, which is the kind of early part of the brain. And so that doesn't leave an awful lot of spare capacity to make decisions because all the signals are getting sent to that part of the brain. I hope that sort of, I'm trying to keep it, as simple as I can to discuss this rather than get into the sort of detail of neuroscience, because I'm sure your listeners wouldn't be that engaged with it. But I hope that's enough to sort of explain how all the kind of neurons firing kind of get displaced to that early part of the brain. Hope that helps.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. Yeah, definitely. I mean, is that transfer of where is the attention? Where is the energy in the brain? And the energy is moved from logic and how do I know what I'm doing into this different area. And I guess the other thing, talking specifically about driving tests, is that at that point, the skills of driving, the nuts and bolts of all the bits and pieces you have to do, somebody's still in that novice phase there, aren't they? So they're at a point where they are ready to drive on their own, but they're still in that novice phase. They're not yet in that experienced phase. And of course, when you've got an experienced driver whose capacity disappears off to the amygdala to deal with their emotions, they've maybe still got something left because it's become automatic, the driving part. They've sort of got mastery of it. So they've maybe got some of that knowledge and some of that there in their automatic processing that they don't have to think
Think about,
about. Whereas with a novice driver, they have to think about it, don't they? They have to actually consciously draw down the information because they haven't mastered it yet. It's not become automatic.
What you're referring to there is sort of fast thinking and slow thinking. Fast thinking is automatic. It doesn't really need any conscious control. And when you have a highly practiced task like driving, then you don't have to think about what you're doing. But obviously, a novice driver, somebody learning to drive, they do have to think. It's very effortful. It's much slower thinking process because you have to access your memory banks and really use all your spare capacity and working memory, whereas an experienced driver can bypass a lot of that. So you're right. So you've got a double whammy, really. Somebody who's learning to drive and gets anxious, those two things can really be compounded.
Immediately, that's also just the way you said that made me think this is what happens when somebody who is an experienced driver locally, but then is asked to do a journey somewhere where they've never been before, they then have that swap over, don't they, from fast thinking to slow thinking. That's where they then have, okay, how a change gear is automatic. But the discomfort comes from the fact that they're having to change the way they think about their driving because they're somewhere new. So suddenly they become like a novice again in that situation.
Absolutely, because whenever you're encountering new situations where you don't already have a mental model for that situation, then you have to slow down and think about the rules of the road. And in fact, I was recently, just the other day, driving in Reading, and I encountered a road design that I'd never come across before. It was really unusual. And I was then conscious of the fact that, oh, what am I supposed to do here? I didn't have a mental model for that type of situation. So it happens to everybody, whether you're very experienced or not at all.
So this part I fascinate with because I think, as a trainer, we were trained that driving skills is good. And, we never, this is going back in the day now, we never really focused on that driver behavior. And we never really took people out of their comfort zone too much because of time or whatever it was. But I used to relate it to when I had a new car. I was always wary of what the new car could do. And that's very similar. I know it's in the book as well about ADAS, the new technology on cars. My experience is those technologies, new technologies, are there to help us. But in actual fact, they have the reverse effect on drivers.
They definitely can have the reverse effect. I mean, don't get me wrong, there are some ADAS features that are really beneficial. For example, advanced emergency braking, certainly does reduce the number of rear-end collisions, and other systems are very good. But others, not so. Like, for example, cruise control, because what can happen with cruise control is that people kind of switch off. Let the vehicle make the decisions around what speed to adopt. And that in itself can mean that people become much more of a passive operator within the vehicle rather than actively engaged with what's going on around them. So they can lose situation awareness, and then start getting distracted, engaging in secondary tasks like using their mobile phones or, reaching for things and so on, or mind wandering. So yeah, ADAS features can kind of create complacency and overconfidence, probably a little bit different to what we were planning to talk about, but also can increase anxiety because if you don't know how the system works and you suddenly hear an alarm or a beep or a message comes up, people can be distracted and feel anxious about, well, what's my car doing now? And that, of course, can interfere with performance. There's plenty of cases where people have ignored alerts because they don't know what they are. Currently, I'm doing some research on bridge strikes. And the problem there, of course, is that you have low bridge alerts within the vehicle as an ADAS feature. It's supposed to help the driver. Alert them when they're off route and, be careful, you're going to crash into a bridge. But because the alarm's been going off for other bridges that they don't have to worry about because they're close by but not actually on their route, you get alarm fatigue and people switch off and they still hit the bridges. So what's really, difficult is that, some of these organizations have spent hundreds of thousands of pounds getting these systems in place, thinking it's going to fix the problem. But those pesky human factors all come to play.
I love the pesky human factors.
DLC uses the word pesky. That's got it's such a great word, isn't it? I use it. I think we've probably had that word used on every episode this season so far.
Oh, really?
It's a great word. So coming back to the book, what was interesting is that Kev and I both go to different sections of the book. So we're, Kev sort of automatically goes into the ADAS and the motorway driving and the bits to do with the training and the driving, whereas I'm straight off to the, oh, look, anxiety. And as we go off in different directions. I liked the fact that there were quite a lot of examples in there. So you didn't just say when this happens, you then go on and say, for example, and you gave some really nice, relatable examples so that if anybody who's reading the book, it really helps them apply that into their own situation. And I thought that was really great. And also, you've got lots of lovely QR codes in there that send you off to further resources. So it means that you've got the book is quite an easy read. It's not going to take long for somebody to read. So if somebody is an anxious driver or somebody's wanting to come back to driving after a break, it's a great resource to start with, really. It's sort of like that starting point, but with all those extra resources. One of the things that was sort of fundamental to the book, and we use a lot in training courses that we do as well, and I think sometimes we forget that other people don't know it, is this connection between thoughts, feelings, and behavior. Can you explain a bit more about that, Lisa?
Well, it's a kind of a cognitive behavior therapy. That's really where it's come from, CBT. And it's well known in clinical settings and with psychotherapy that the way that people think affects how they feel, which of course will affect their behavior. And it's a really straightforward kind of triangle, if you like. But it also goes the other way. People sometimes are not consciously aware of what their behaviors are. And then they start trying to understand what their behaviors mean. And then that can affect their feelings, which can affect their thoughts. So it can go in different directions. I think what's key about that whole model is that we know that if we're going to change the way that people feel and therefore the way that they behave when they're driving, then we need to change the way that they think. And how you change the way that people think is something, of course, that psychologists have been trying to do for many decades. And I specialize in the sort of driver behavior aspect of it, trying to influence people's attitudes to driving. But actually, it's more about their beliefs as well as their attitudes. So if you hold the belief, for example, that other drivers are going to be criticizing you, you know, for making a mistake, that you're going to get the horns honking and people shouting and swearing, you know, that you're worried that people will crash into you. If you have those thought processes, then clearly, you know, that's going to influence your ability to drive. So it's about increasing confidence, you know, which I know is what this is all about, and developing a new belief that actually, you know, I can take control of this situation. It's okay if I feel anxious sometimes. I can deal with that by just pulling over, taking some deep breaths, you know, making sure that I feel more relaxed. And it's a separate thing to the skill. I can control those emotions by controlling the way that I think about my abilities as a driver.
And that is, I mean, that example that you've given is exactly what we hear all the time. And it's also what we hear from driving instructors who come and talk to us, is their driving's great, but they're always worried about other people on the road and, you know, other people beeping and things like that. So that example is exactly where lots of driving anxiety comes from. It's worrying about other people, other drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's that kind of feeling that it's referred to in some of the work that I've done around emotion-focused coping. It's a coping strategy, but it's not an effective coping strategy. A more positive, effective coping strategy would be to be kind of aware of the fact that it's your thoughts that are causing the problem, not other drivers. Other drivers do what they do. You know, they have to take care of their own piece of the process, but you have to take care of your own, and that you have responsibility for that. So it's really about trying to develop patience with yourself and be supportive of yourself and allow for the times when you're feeling a bit anxious. You know, and actually, we should say that anxiety comes from two different sources. You know, one is a kind of a more predisposition towards being anxious, which is a kind of a personality type trait. And then the other is anxiety that we all feel from time to time. So some people are more predisposed to feeling anxious based on their personality characteristics. And again, that's something that can be addressed and something that we don't really need to feel governs our life. You know, it can be addressed. So that's the message, I think, just to forgive yourself if you're feeling anxious, take a few deep breaths, just get back and try again.
Yeah. And that recognizing that your thoughts are actually the cause.
Yeah.
It's your thoughts that are often the cause of the way that you feel. And then realizing that thoughts aren't always facts. They're not always true. You don't have to believe everything that you think. Just because your brain gives you a thought doesn't mean you have to believe it. And the thought could be trying to stop you from doing something that you really want to do, but it's trying to keep you safe.
Yeah.
Your thoughts aren't always in line with your thoughts and your wishes.
Yeah.
So, is it helpful? Is it a fact? Is it true?
And
that just being able to recognize and observe your thoughts can be a massive breakthrough for lots of people.
You don't have to believe everything that's going on in your mind. Absolutely. Yeah. There are very limiting thoughts, you know, and to a certain extent, many people do have imposter syndrome. You know, they do feel that they're not capable of doing the things that they're, you know, in the midst of doing, which of course includes driving. But, you know, what a belief is really a sense of certainty that something is true. You know, and as you say, if you just say to yourself, well, it's only true because I'm telling myself it's true. You know, there's plenty of examples in life where people have just absolutely defied the odds and overcome incredible adversity and just said, well, look, you know, and you know what, eventually, when you kind of go through the motions of putting yourself in these situations, you start to recognize that, yes, I can do it. And that in itself helps you to change your beliefs about your abilities. You know, one of the things that psychologists do is talk about, well, think about a time when you were able to drive safely without worrying about what other drivers were doing. And, you know, let's go through what happened in that situation and how can you translate that and transfer that into where you are today, right now. So, you know, there's strategies that can be used to help people to overcome those limiting beliefs.
And that's one of the strategies that I spotted through the book as well. So where you've given things in the book, that's often the first strategy that in the list is sort of like, when have you done this before? Remind yourself that you've done this before and survived. You came out okay in the end.
Yeah, it's very empowering.
I think that is it, isn't it? It's recognizing that thought to start with, and then you challenge it, and then you use it. You can change it or whatever you want to do. So, yeah.
And things like, you know, just being able to recognize how you feel and being able to voice it, you know, and say to your instructor, oh, I can start to feel my anxiety rising. That in itself can make you feel more relaxed because you feel able to talk about it. And therefore, your instructor can say, okay, that's fine. Let's pull over where it's safe to do so. And feeling that you've got somewhere to go, that you don't have to keep pushing through and trying to force yourself into a driving situation where you're not feeling comfortable. And that in itself can be overwhelming. You know, I recently, just last week, I delivered a course to Southeast Coast Ambulance driving instructors, and they were telling me about a particular case where they had no idea this student had. There was no inkling all throughout the course that they were suffering with anxiety. They just seemed to be a model student, taking on board everything because we are very good at masking anxiety. And then at the end of the course, when they passed the test, they just collapsed into an absolute crumpled mess, you know, of tears and hysterics, because they'd been carrying this anxiety throughout the course for so long. Obviously managed somehow to do it, but there was a price to pay because the effects at the end of the test were really quite amazing for the instructors involved. It's like they had no idea that this trainee was suffering so much.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point for any learners listening is, you know, the person, your instructor, the person in, or your supervising driver, if it's not an instructor, but the person who's in the car next to you is someone that you should be able to communicate with and communicate how you're feeling so that they can give you that support and, yeah, that encourage you to, okay, let's find a safe space where we can pull over and have a bit of a reset so that you're ready to go again. Because the truth is that you may well need that as a novice driver when you're solo as well. It's the one piece of advice my dad gave me after I passed my test, which was, don't forget, Tracy, if you find yourself, I mean, he wouldn't have used the word anxiety then.
Nervous.
Back in the 80s, I don't know, whatever word we used to use in the 80s for that feeling. But he said, if you get yourself feeling all of a jitter and confused, just find somewhere safe to pull over, calm yourself down, and then work out, because of course we didn't have sat navs or anything like that then as well. It was probably to do with getting lost, actually. But he said, just pull over, reset, calm yourself down, and go again, or ask for directions or whatever it would be. And I think that's the one piece of advice that stayed with me after I learned to drive. It's probably the one piece of advice that everybody should remember, that it's okay to do that.
And also to, you know, pat yourself on the back and recognize your accomplishments. I don't think we're very good at that generally, especially women. Women aren't very good at it generally. But just to sort of reflect on your practice and say, I did really well there. You know, instead of focusing on the negatives, we're very good at focusing on the negatives and beating ourselves up, aren't we? But focus on the positives. You know, what was good about that? And you can build on that, and that helps you with developing your confidence as well.
Yeah, definitely. That we have to make a conscious effort, don't we? If we're going to look at the positives, we actually almost have to force ourselves to do. But this is the thing, and again, that's something else that was in the book, was lots of opportunities for self-reflection. And yeah, if we're going to reflect, if we're going to think back on our journey, then let's look back on the whole journey, not just the sticky bits that we automatically go to. Let's look at the whole journey. What went well? What am I proud of? And doing that on a regular basis so that, yeah, pat on the back, some sort of recognition or reward, because that's where we'll build our confidence from. The other thing there is we have to do it consistently. Because very often with these sorts of practices, they don't stay with us. They don't become a habit. So we have to make them a habit. We have to do them consistently, don't we? Otherwise, we find that we start to slip back into old habits. So, Lisa, when we invited you on and we talked about talking about the book, is there anything we haven't asked you? Is there anything you thought, oh, I really want to talk about this and that actually we haven't covered? Is there anything you were hoping to say that we haven't touched on?
That's always difficult because now my brain's going to all sorts of things that we could talk about. I guess it would be worth mentioning that there are essentially three different sources of error, and that we ought to perhaps look at that. You know, one is the individual as a source of error, because, like, for example, you're prone to anxiety as an individual. You know, you're perhaps inexperienced, you're perhaps very young, you're perhaps in a car that you're not familiar with, or perhaps you've just had a row with your mother or your father or whatever, and it's kind of upset you. So there's the source of error, which can come from the individual, but error can also come from the performance of the task, because some tasks have a much higher level of cognitive workload than others. And that in itself can increase the risk of error, which of course can feed into anxiety, because when you commit to errors, you're more likely to feel anxious. So I think I would suggest that there are some tasks that if you're suffering with anxiety and you find yourself committing more errors under those sorts of maneuvers, then the key really is to really practice those maneuvers very, very well. And I'm thinking in particular about parking, low speed maneuvering type maneuvers, because they tend to be quite demanding on our brains, because we have to hold a lot of information at once. And wherever the task is really high on workload, you've got the chance of committing error and therefore the chance of getting anxious. So, for example, if you've got a queue of traffic behind you and you're trying to park in a fairly small space and you're having to go backs and forwards, and meanwhile the traffic's building up, you can sense how that could be a really anxious, anxiety-provoking situation. So I think a good tip for people who struggle with certain types of tasks when they're learning to drive or already driving, would be to overly practice those tasks off-road, in a car park, you know, somewhere where you're not going to have the environmental factors that will increase your anxiety, like queues of traffic and honking horns and people who try and swerve around you when you're trying to park and that kind of thing. So I think that would probably be a tip that I would offer as a good one for dealing with anxious situations.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And we talk about practice making better. It doesn't mean that you're going to have one session practicing this thing and suddenly you're going to be an expert, but practice makes better. And practicing what to do when it goes wrong as well. Yeah. So, you know, if you don't manage to do that maneuver, do that task first time, okay, what do you do when it does go wrong? Because if you keep getting it right all the time, then That's brilliant. But then what happens on that one time when it doesn't go right first time? So practicing it going wrong as well could be another one. Lisa, thank you so much for your time today. I think that's been great. How can people find out more about you and how can they find the book?
Well, you know, it'd be great if people want to find out more. Go to sidedrivegroup.com. That's my website. And yeah, the book is obviously available on the DVSA website and all good bookshops and Amazon and whatever. But I don't get royalties. I do not get royalties for the book. So I think that I'm trying to sell it. It was just a labor of love. That's all.
Lovely. Lisa, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I really think that's going to be helpful having that description of how our brains work.
You're welcome. Looking forward to hearing it.
I'm just going to jump in here to let you know about our Drive Calm Journal. We've created a 12-week prompt journal to support our listeners to take action and improve driving confidence. The journal includes questions, prompts, and exercises to create an action plan and an opportunity for reflection afterwards. Search Drive Calm on Amazon to take a look. We hope it helps. Thank you for listening. Find out about the different ways that you can work with us on our website, www.confidentdrivers.co.uk, and begin to transform the way you feel about driving.